One of the most horrific moments in American history happened on December 29th, 1890. It was the massacre at Wounded Knee. A regiment of the 7th Cavalry had surrounded an encampment of the Lakota people on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And there are various stories about how the shooting started, but in the end, some 300 Lakota people were massacred. Two-thirds of them were women and children, many of whom were hunted down miles away. The Lakota medicine man Black Elk, who witnessed the massacre at Wounded Knee, said later, "Something else died there in the bloody mud and was buried in the blizzard. A people's dream died." So this is the backdrop for Jonas Agee's new novel. It's called The Bones of Paradise. The story begins 10 years after the Wounded Knee massacre, when all the characters, from white cattle ranchers to Sioux survivors, are dealing with the aftermath. Steve Paulson sat down with her.
Why did you want to write about the Wounded Knee massacre?
For years, I've known about Wounded Knee. I read about it. And in the early 90s, I drove up to South Dakota to Pine Ridge and Rosebud, and I visited the site of Wounded Knee on a Sunday morning. And I was so struck by it, so moved by the kind of spareness and the economy I saw at work there. I just couldn't get rid of the idea. It was still there. I was haunted by it. It was a beautiful, bare site, and there were ceremonial bags of tobacco and cigarettes left there and little notes, and there's just a little tiny, you know, relatively speaking, monument there. And the land is very bare there, pretty stark, and it just seemed accurate. And then later I went to a church on Rosebud that had been decorated by the Lakota people, and it was quite beautiful. It was a Catholic church. And the woman who was, you know, the guide who was taking me around asked me if I wanted to see something, and I said yes. And she took me to a back room, and there were a series of drawers and a built-in cabinet. She pulled out a drawer, and there was a ghost shirt, and she explained it to me.
Wow, and the ghost shirt of what was worn by the Lakota at Wounded Knee?
Yes. I just can't. It was so terribly moving. There was a kind of spirit there, a kind of something. And when I later told a Native friend of mine, she said that a white person shouldn't have seen that. And I felt kind of both ashamed and lucky that I had been shown that, but I also felt that it was given to me for a reason. And I thought, for years I've thought, I have to write about this, but I have no idea how.
You'll have to tell us the history of the ghost shirts and the role they played during what happened at Wounded Knee.
Yeah. The ghost shirt was eventually, one of the visions was that if the people took this cloth, this simple cotton cloth, linen cloth, and painted it blue or got light blue cloth and painted figures of the birds and animals and butterflies and plants that had disappeared from their world. And this is what the whole ghost dance was about. It was to bring back the world that had been lost. And they believed that if they wore these, there would be protection from the soldiers' bullets and they could not be killed. And so they began to wear these shirts as they danced, and that was a fairly relatively late development.
And the story of what happened is the U.S. cavalry, the soldiers, were so enraged by seeing the Lakota doing this dance that might have been one of the reasons why they opened fire.
Right. Well, it was a complex situation because it was the 7th Cavalry, and of course they were the soldiers that were at Custer's last stand. So there was a revenge motive there, and they were drunk. Some men had hauled in a great deal of alcohol the night before, so they were suffering from hangovers, and some of them were still drunk. They were cold. It's December 29th. There had been snow. You know, the white government and the white settlers were terrified of the natives who were gathering, even though these are very poor people. And they're dancing. Their feet are bound in rags. They have, you know, very, very little food. They're trying to make big stews with a couple of rabbits. And, you know, there's almost no protein in rabbit. And so this is a starving people. And there was still this enormous fear on the part of the white settlers that the native people would somehow gather and run them over, and they would face the you know, the danger again. And so there were a lot of calls to the government to stop it and to get rid of these people. I mean, literally get rid of them. And what they were doing, the Native people were simply practicing a new religion. It was a religious celebration.
The dance was to invoke the spirits to come back,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yes, the buffalo to come back. And they believed that if they chanted long enough and they would call and the buffalo would return. One of their songs said, the buffalo are coming, the buffalo are coming. But there was mass hysteria on the part of everyone else. So it was just a very volatile situation. And I describe it in the book, what happened that day. I did a lot of research. And
What kind of research did you do? I mean, were there any surprises that you found during your research?
Oh, yeah. I was surprised by how virulent the opposition was. I knew there had to be opposition, but I hadn't really understood how the Indian agents and the settlers around them were simply just, that's enough. We've had enough out of these people. Let's just get rid of them. And I guess they saw there was a moment that set off the gunfire. Somebody had told the cavalry that the people were armed, and they produced a few rifles, old broken ones, and they said that wasn't enough. And then apparently one of the Native men threw dirt into the air, which was what they did to start the dance and to provide the road for the buffalo to use to descend to the earth again. And the cavalry thought that it was a signal to start a war, a gunfire. And so they just started firing. And they had these huge guns. They had the Hotchkiss, great big guns. And
so they could just mow down the
liquor. And they did. They just you know, massacred them. I mean, there's just no way around it. And it was just horrific. And the fact that they chased the women and children and caught them and killed them was pretty horrific.
So you've been to Pine Ridge Reservation. You're white. I mean, you know this history. I'm guessing you feel bad about that too. And I've been there as well. And it's like, I mean, you can't help but feel a kind of historical guilt, I guess. It may be a different kind of guilt as well. What do you do with that?
Well, I think as a writer, of course, I write and I continue to champion the causes of people as they come up. And I teach, so I work very hard to bring my students to understand, to grasp the complexity of our history and our relationships, and to sometimes, in some cases, to overcome a prejudice that they have and to express what their experiences are. And I think that's the way artists work generally. And I also, I keep thinking I should go out to Standing Rock if you want to know the truth. I think I should be there. I think sometimes just a body is needed. And we have our own problem in Nebraska with White Clay, the town just below Pine Ridge that sells several million cans of beer a year and has 12 residents. And the problem with the town is that they are single-handedly practically destroying the people of Pine Ridge. There's 1 in 4 children is born with fetal alcohol syndrome because of the alcohol sales that are going on. I think we have to work to close that town, to close off that source of destruction. And so there's a combination of political activity, of speaking out, of writing, of teaching. And that's, you have to do what your life permits and what you're able to do at any given moment.
Do you feel guilt yourself? I mean, personal
Absolutely.
Guilt?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm ashamed. And yet shame can help you in some ways, but if I obsess about shame, then I'm going to be obsessing about myself, and I have to move out of that and begin to look at the larger world and see what I can do instead of simply, you know, be mired in it. And I think it's a complex experience.
Yeah.
I think we have to support other people, and we have to not sit back. And some people, when they feel ashamed, they react violently against against the feeling of shame, and they blame the victims. And we certainly need to avoid doing that. I think education is a big thing. But sometimes simply just offering help in whatever way you can do that, and getting the story out.
Yeah.
I'm a person who tells stories, so my job is to get the stories out.
Janice Agee is the author of the novel The Bones of Paradise. Steve Paulson talked with her.